This is Expanded States. Join us for a deep exploration in expanding awareness, opening the heart, and journeying beyond boundaries. Listen in for illuminating conversation and mind-expanding topics like psychedelics, mindfulness, breathwork, nature immersion, sound healing, and so much more. Welcome back to the Expanded States podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Gale, and I am here today with my friend and colleague, Lauren Muggleby, who is an executive and leadership coach. Lauren, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Michelle.
Really fun. I'm looking forward to this conversation, and I'd love for you to just general introduce yourself to our listeners, kind of a little bit about your background and the work that you do.
Sure. I'm an executive and leadership coach currently. I'm also on faculty at the Psychedelic Coaching Institute, where I help other coaches and practitioners to learn the skill of psychedelics and integrate that as a modality into their coaching. And I was in my former life in tech for 2 decades. I worked for many Fortune 100 companies. Meta was the most recent one I worked for. I've spent some time at Facebook and Instagram within Meta. Before that, I worked for Ticketmaster, mostly overseas in London. And I worked for a couple of other companies before that. So I really love bringing practitioners together to practice and holding leadership retreats, just doing really deep work with my coaching clients. I have 2 young daughters. I live in the north of California, in the East Bay, and it's a little bit about me.
Thank you. And I'd love for you to share, you know, I remember when I first met you and you have these brightest eyes and this huge, beautiful energy that's also super grounded. And I was drawn to you right away. And I remember you telling me early on in a really beautiful, vulnerable way that you were recovering from intensity. And I don't think you're alone in that. And so I'm also thinking of this word intensity through the lens of expanded states, right? So that you know, you can really expand intensity and it can take over your life, or we can bring it closer to us, right? And be able to use it more skillfully. And my guess is you have been playing in that realm. So I'm wondering if you'll share a little bit about that journey with us, about recovering from intensity and how you now use it, you know, more from self-energy, right? We both share internal family systems language, IFS. And, you know, we're as we'll talk a bit about leadership today, of course, and what is that leading from self, you know, that now you're experiencing this intensity that you have and know in a more skillful way. So if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about that.
Yes. The language that I've used for a long time is having had an addiction to intensity, also addiction to needing to control, to be in control, an addiction to being right. So I would say now I have parts that are extreme in sort of their wants and their needs, and they can turn the volume up really high. So come from a background of, a father who it was important to excel in school and in sports, and to be the best, and I think developed some of my parts, developed strategies that really didn't know how to do anything like the middle path or just a little bit. You know, it was either on or off, black or white. So I would find myself addicted to work instead of just working 40, 50, 60, 70 hours, maybe working 80 hours, 100 hours, revolving my entire life around my work. Or instead of just working out 20 or 30 minutes a day, feeling like I needed to work out like 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day, like, you know, or obviously with substance, you know, you're out for drinks at work, and instead of just having one drink, you're having, you know, many, many drinks. I would just say that what seemed to feel really good to my parts was this level of intensity of really like not doing anything halfway, which then extended into every part of my life. So as I got older and when I left corporate, I started a practice of, I would call it now, the language I would use is sort of a stillness practice or a softening, listening to these parts that really felt like they needed intensity, and trying to understand what it was that they needed or wanted, and coming into a middle path or a middle way for many things that were important to me before, that's more sustainable and that actually feels really good. And so I think I've just become more sensitive, and as my sensitivity has increased, things in smaller quantity have felt intense without needing as much of it. You know, more is not more. Sometimes less really is more. And that's been a journey for me.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I, you know, let's just talk a little bit about parts work. You know, there may be people listening that aren't familiar with internal family systems and with parts work. Could you just give a little kind of overview of what that means to you? You know, we're both, I know you're self-taught. I'm in the midst of a program right now, in the Moxie School. But neither one of us have done like the official IFS training. And we both use it, you know, in our coaching and the work that we do. How would you just kind of explain that to someone who didn't know much about it? The short version, of course, there's a million things anyone listening can go and learn about IFS and internal family systems, but just like the little snapshot here, because I think we'll be using that language throughout the next little while.
Yeah. It's a really beautiful modality that is versatile, that can be applied therapeutically or in a coaching context or just in life. If you are a systems thinker and used to sort of framing things as a system, and you think about yourself as a multiplicity or as more than one self or a mono, but more of like a symphony of selves, then yourselves work together in a system. And they're doing different jobs and they're operating in different ways to try to keep equilibrium. And the easiest way I can explain it is from actually a leadership context. In coaching, people want to be stronger leaders or more potent leaders or be in deeper service. If we start with ourselves, as a leader within us, that have a team or a family that they are serving and creating a container of safety for. The idea of internal family systems is that you in self energy are responsible for creating a safe, loving, inclusive environment for all of your parts so that everyone can, reach their highest possibility, see what's coming from the future for them, and do the job they're equipped to do, that they want to do, that they love to do. And so when I understood I was in two minds about something in a coaching context, and my coach said to me, which of those parts is speaking loudest to you? And I said, what do you mean? by that. And he said, you want to speak to that part? And I said, I don't know how to do that. And he took me through this very simple exercise of just having a dialogue with my part that wanted one thing and my other part that wanted a different thing. And it was incredibly powerful. And it just completely blew my mind. And so I became a practitioner of this idea of an awareness that comes from understanding our own internal system and bending the beam backward on ourselves, and then being in deep inquiry with these different parts of us that want different things. And so it's a deep practice. It's a slow practice. It's a nuanced practice. And it's a practice of witnessing and inquiry and interconnection with you and your parts.
And for those people listening who do experiment in the psychedelic world, you know, it is a, you know, you and I have shared this. It is a very psychedelic experience without the psychedelics, right? You really are expanding your state and seeing yourself more fully and being able to see those parts so clearly, and then being able to access that self energy, which is similar to what you access, you know, when you experience psychedelics.
Yeah, I want to, okay, there's two things that you've said I really want to talk about when it comes to IFS that are really powerful. One is, how do you know when you're in self energy? How do you know when you're not blending with a part, you know? And they have these C words that are really easy to sort of remember. And so I'll just talk about some of them. The leaders who come to me, they want to be more confident. They want to be more curious. They want to be calm. They want to be creative. They want to be collaborative, and they want to connect. These C words are the way we know, sort of markers of when we're in self energy. But it's even more simple than that. If you would wave a magic wand and change anything in this moment right now, that's a part that wants something. If you're in a place that is so content and you can feel compassion towards all of your parts and everyone else, you know you're in self energy when you wouldn't wave a magic wand and change anything. It's just a miracle, right? In this moment, right now, to be talking to you here, right now, and now, and now. And not wanting for anything. We're literally wanting for nothing. That's how we know we're in self energy. And so just learning that piece of like, oh, and now I know it's a part that wants this thing. Okay, the other piece of IFS that's so beautiful and so powerful, and what I learned coming into the space of somatic coaching, and that's why expanded states are so beautiful for coaching and coaching for leadership specifically, is the somatic piece of connecting our parts with somewhere in our body. It means we have to de-armor and come into our body and become more sensitive. And this is probably one of the hardest things that I see people have been working in corporate for a really long time, or in like just whatever hierarchical spaces, and armoring up, you know, armor up to stay safe, or you're armoring up to, you don't want to be emotional, or you just want to be able to get things done, right? This de-armoring that is required in order to, when you feel a part of you and be able to connect it where you feel that part in your body, is next level sort of leadership stuff that nobody talks about. Nobody trains you. No one talks about the importance of this, but being able to connect into your body and identify the part there, and then listen for the part from that place, is been, I think, one of the most sort of, I don't know, I would say sort of revelatory moments on my coaching journey, which I would say now, like somatic coaching and any aspects of somatic training you bring into coaching are going to be incredibly powerful.
Yeah. And I'd love to bring into this part of the conversation, and full disclosure, Lauren was my coach for a while, and she's definitely still an advisor of my life, for sure. I go to her when I'm really noodling on something that matters to me. So full disclosure there. And something that you introduced me to during when I was working with you was the Second Half of Life book. And I know that's, you know, most, if not all of your clients, you know, are in the second half of life, as are mine for the most part. And I'd just love to bring that into this conversation because there's something unique and magical around leadership and self-leadership and self-energy and the second half of life and the weaving of those things in the work that, you know, we're both involved in. So I'd love to hear, just hear about that from your perspective, the work that you're doing in that, why it matters to leadership.
Yeah. Oh, I love Angelus Arian and such a teacher for me. So I was very surprised when I went through my executive coach training at Berkeley Executive Coaching Institute that the pedagogy they're teaching is from Angelus Arian. And it's the way of the, you know, the visionary and the warrior and the healer and the teacher. And incredibly sort of indigenous and about initiation and about right speech and archetypal. And I was like, what is this? You know, this is like so out there. This is like Haas School of Business. They're teaching indigenous practices. And like the light bulb really went off for me when I heard a lot of people who were becoming coaches in the second half of life were really in need of soul retrieval. I didn't even know what that meant at the time, but Angelus in this book talks about when was the last time you sang? When was the last time you danced? When did you stop being enchanted by your life stories? When was the last time that you experienced the sweet territory of silence? And the idea that what was missing in leadership and in the second half of life was this idea of this need for soul retrieval, and that there were these archetypes through which we could access these energies in a different way that was more somatic, more about the body, more about a practice. I was totally blown away by her. And so I read this book, and it was about these 8 gates of initiation and that we all go through them. This is entirely cross-cultural. Angelus Arian is this amazing, anthropologist and just a real beautiful storyteller and researcher and writer. And she talks about standing at the threshold of a particular gate, knowing that you're at that gate. How do you recognize, and what are the practices at that gate? What are the lessons at that gate, or the learnings at that gate? What are the reflections at that gate? So, and the gifts at that gate. And so I loved this book. I thought, I've never seen or read anything like this. And what a beautiful frame, and combining this with an actual real life experience. So I recreated these gates on my family's land. So people could actually go stand at a physical gate while they are doing this practice and this reflection. And there was a shared language. And so this book has been very instrumental for many of my clients, for myself, and there are still experiences and things to explore, even though Angie's no longer with us. I think so deep and so beautiful, and specifically about initiation at the gate, the rites of passage at the gate, is so important for us in the second half of life.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yes. And I know you have some other tools and like things that, you know, I love, you know, when I think of you, I often think of what wants to emerge from the edges in the future. If you'd share, you know, how that language weaves into, you know, this, your work with leaders and with practitioners and with parts work and the second half of life. What are some of those other tools? I know listening is something that really sparks you, you know, kind of that deep listening and, you know, as it should for any good coach. guide, facilitator, but there's a unique way in which I think you bring to that conversation and I'd love for you to share.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm really a student of the Presencing Institute and a teacher very early on in my journey when I was first coming into this work was Otto Scharmer and this idea of awareness-based systems change. What does that even mean? That's a huge mouthful, right? But this idea of really bending the beam backwards on ourselves as a member or a part of a system. So we have our parts and they're a system within us. And then we're part of other systems outside ourselves, whether it's at work or part of a family or whatever it is. And so change in the coaching world, we talk a lot about people who want to change or evolve in some way or transform. So change really comes from bending the beam backwards on our own mind or our own consciousness, this body and mind and spirit and all these other things. But the idea that just starting with ourself and becoming more aware of ourselves and our behavior in the system and listening as the way that we do that. And we listen from a special place, which the Presencing Institute talks about as level four listening, which is not listening from a place to just download what someone else is saying, not listening from a place to like a scientific place where we're listening to refute or prove or disprove what someone is saying, and not even listening, although this is important, from an empathic place, which is, oh yeah, I know how that feels. I'm going to get myself into how you feel and be there with you in the feeling. And I can be empathically cognitive or, you know, emotionally empathic. But even that is, not as potent or powerful as level four listening, which is listening from the future. It is listening from a place that is being able to sort of see what a person is becoming. It is, you're not basing it on like what's happened to them before, how do they look like now or whatever, but if we're really doing our job as coaches, what are we good at? We are good at recognizing the potential or the future possibility of what that person's becoming that they may not even be aware of yet. And so this idea of really sort of attuning and dropping in and what Otto calls presencing, which is beyond coherence and even beyond attunement, but this idea of coming down into your feminine and listening from within the body, but also the energy outside of the body and what's emerging from the future, listening from the future, is something that only we can do. AI can't listen from the future. It can only listen from the past and learn from the past. And so how are we different or unique from like a processor that all day long will beat us, you know, in recognizing patterns or what's come before? how are we able to create something totally new in the field with the person we're sitting with as a coach and listen from that place of the future? It requires practice. And guess what? We're full of parts. And so you can literally practice this kind of listening all day by just thinking about your different parts as, what are they becoming? Who are they becoming? What is their highest future possibility? And in that way, you're able to practice coaching yourself, your internal selves all day long.
Wow. And how does this relate to intuition? Right? Like, I'm hearing a lot of what you're sharing feels like there's this element of intuition, and intuition is such an, I think a loaded, a loaded quality, right? Because I know it's something I focus on a lot for myself when I'm sitting with others, you know, what's mine and what's theirs, and, you know, when do I speak up and when do I not speak up? And, you know, when you're listening from the future, there's also a part of my own imagination, right? And my own intuition. And, you know, how do you work with that? Like within yourself, you know, how do you weave in intuition to all that you just shared?
Yeah. Question. The body is really intelligent. There is such a deep level of intelligence that is so beyond or beneath the surface of just words. Our psyche, in fact, works in, like, you know, imagery and color and texture and things that are totally nonlinear. And so how do you tap in? I guess it's easier for women. We know this. First of all, we're just tend to be, you know, sort of more chaotic or non-linear, non-verbal. The feminine itself are those things. And so we all have the capacity, but our ability to know we have that capacity and believe we have it and hone it and trust it is what is not always there. And so, for example, when you're listening and it's a color that's coming through, or it's a ship, or it's something totally non sequitur to what's happening that seems very irrational, but you trust yourself enough and the person you're with to maybe, like, you know, share that. Well, sometimes it sparks something really profound for that person in a way you couldn't have, believed or known. And when you start to do it and see it happening, maybe the trust can build there. And so I would say it is a practice just like anything else can be practiced. And then that idea of trusting and sharing, even if something seems silly, or, you know, it's okay to say, you know, I don't know why, just this image keeps coming to me. Does this mean anything to you? You know, the language of intuition, like, yeah, I'm gonna trust my gut, or I don't know, I had this sixth sense, or it felt wrong, or it felt cringy. We actually talk about intuition all the time, but we use language and words. It's, I think, a little, I don't know, more acceptable in our culture, or less sort of like woo.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this type of thing. But it's really, if you're extremely armored and you're not in a practice of stillness or that kind of deep listening, it is harder to access it and believe that it is there. I think it is only through direct experience and having sort of these profound experiences with other people or with clients that you maybe start to understand the potency of it and the effectiveness of it. And then, of course, it just perpetuates wanting to be there more in that space.
Mm. I have a question about how your lens and knowing of leadership has changed. You know, you've been at this for quite a few years. You were a leader in your own right, in the tech world for decades, really. Mm-hmm. And I often, you know, when people ask me how I define leadership, you know, when I worked in the corporate world, I would, and still, you know, say anyone who has influence, right? It could be a parent. It could be, you know, anyone who has influence over a project, right? Often in the corporate world, people feel like if they don't have people reporting to them, they're not a leader. And if you have influence on the way something's happening with a group of people, you're a leader. So that's super basic. I just share that because I'm curious how your knowing of leadership has changed in these mm-hmm. years, you know?
Yeah. Well, I really love this frame of leadership as your ability to create a container in which other people can reach their highest possibility or their highest potential. I hesitate to use the word potential just because it's loaded for so many people, but the idea that you could create a space or a container in which people are able to reach their highest future possibility is a definition I was working with for a while. And then how it's evolved now is leadership is a feeling I get when I'm around you. If you're a leader and I feel big in your presence, I feel seen and heard and felt. I feel regulated, right? I feel calm and I feel confident. I'm more defining leadership now as a feeling that I have when I'm in someone's presence, that I feel like greatness is possible for me. And I know instantly when I'm with somebody who I don't feel that around, I feel small and I feel unseen and unmet and unheard and unheld and unsafe and dysregulated. So, like, what if we thought about leadership as like our ability to be aware about what's in the field and to be in different states of regulation, and that down-regulated state of rest and digest from which it's easy to learn and it's easy to influence and it's easy to communicate, and that the other people around us, when we walked into the room, were just instantly brought into that frequency. That is leadership. And so I think the way that by definition has evolved is it's gone from being like a thing you do. Oh, he's so influential. She's so charismatic. You know, this person just is able to lead from the front, and that's so amazing. And forget about all that. How do I feel around you? Yeah. And so, yeah, I guess that's a little bit how it's evolved. And leadership for me is about love. And that's like, so I get so activating. Like, yeah, the last thing you want to be doing in a corporate setting is be talking about love. But actually, there's this Czeslaw Milosz poem that he talks about. Love is the ability to look at yourself as one looks at distant things. You're one thing among many. And he talks about standing in the glow of ripeness. This is crowning yourself as the sovereign, not so you can have power over or be above, or so everyone looks at you and it's all about you and listen to me, but so you can radiate out this glow of ripeness to the people around you and to your own parts. Stand there and just radiate the glow of ripeness. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to say anything. You don't have to be anything. This is leadership to me.
That's a perfect place to end.
Thank you.
That's so beautiful, Lauren. I just appreciate being in community with you and getting to push edges with you and observe your edge pushing, which just lights me up. And I'm just so thankful for this conversation. I think it's going to serve many.
And for
your leadership in the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been so much fun.
Wonderful.
And it was lovely to spend this time with you.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll have some show notes, how to get in touch with Lauren if you want to reach her. And until next time, bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Expanded States. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please follow us and be sure to share our show with your family and friends.